So you have a itinerary and your love overlanding. You have plans to do it big on the trace and some super glamping. One idea's deep news and reviews, a podcast the first rate and here just for you. You don't have to think about it, join us and be about it. Something interesting we want to hear about it. Come on, let's talk about it. Welcome to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints Podcast.
Sponsored by Midland. Communication for every adventure. The industry leader in radio communication technology and innovation for over 50 years. Sponsored by MyMedic. Sponsored by Tembo Tusk. Sponsored by Shower Pouch. Sponsored by DeMoss Collective, mission built and made for mobility. Sponsored by BrewTrek. Sponsored by Hard Impact Designs.
Always remember, the opinion you follow should be your own. Just consider the things stated here to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
Hey out there, we have a very special podcast this week here on the Random Waypoints podcast. Me and Mike have some very special friends with us, Deb and Mike from Iron Horse Overland. And if you don't know anything about Iron Horse Overland, well, let me tell you that Iron Horse Overland, also known as Mike and Deb Lee, became a thought as Mike and Deb contemplated life after retirement. Both had spent their lives working in the emergency services fields, law enforcement, fire, and military, and raising their four kids. Debbie and Mike grew up enjoying the outdoors and have always loved camping, hiking, off-roading, hunting, and fishing. And so plans were made, the house was sold, and they decided to take their love for the outdoors to the next level and transition to a full-time life of an overland traveler. Over the past 2.5 years, they and their dog Gunner have traveled and camped throughout the entire North American continent and Baja in their 2015 Toyota 4Runner and 2020 Patriot Camper X1H. In January, they started their mainland Mexico Central American adventure. Deb and Mike, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Phil.
Good seeing you guys again. It's been a little while.
It's been a while, Mike. Yeah. Expo.
So you guys are no stranger to us guys on the podcast. This is your first time on the podcast, but we've been knowing you for a while now.
Yeah. Met at the expos, I believe. And been to the gathering together and
hung out in Baja with Mike and
all sorts
all
of
over the place.
Yeah.
We're trying to get, you know, a record of how many different places and countries we can hang together.
That's right.
So for the listeners and viewers, the first thing we'd like to know is, where are you? Where exactly are you? Well, not exactly.
We are in the beautiful country of Belize right now.
Southern Belize.
And how has the trip in South America been so far? And you can take that question in any way you like.
In Central America, you mean?
I'm sorry.
We haven't made it to
haven't
South.
Made it to South America yet. Central America, we did most of mainland Mexico, a bunch of mainland Mexico.
Like 20 states out of the 31.
Yeah, and then one day in Guatemala, because we had some paperwork issues with some travel companions. And then went back into Mexico. And so Belize is really the first Central American country that we've spent any time in. Belize is beautiful.
Wonderful.
Yeah, just beautiful.
So is there anything that maybe the listeners could glean from your situation at the border getting into Guatemala? Is there a tip maybe to give or something like that?
Yeah, so...
If you don't own your vehicle outright, or you are from a state that does not give the original title to you.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to have to be very, very specific with the letter that the bank gives you in order to get in, depending on who's at the border at the time.
Yeah, I mean, all the reading we did was if you do not own your vehicle and the bank owns it, you need to get a letter from your bank saying, hey, it's okay for you to bring your vehicle out of the United States and into the countries that you're going to be going to. Well, that's only true if you get somebody at the border that doesn't completely stick to the, like Guatemala, it says right on the building, original copy, not a copy, original title.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that original title, depending on the person you get, you probably aren't going to get in.
I think the gal was going to let them slide on that. But then one of the verbiage about insurance, she got caught on that. So, again, it has to be very specific. Sorry, we're in a overlanding camping spot, but it's by a bridge and there's trucks going by sometimes. But I mean, anybody that's done international travel, you know that sometimes it's just who you get. The lady actually said, go to a different border crossing and they might let you through. So,
yeah.
Which, by the way, for those of you that don't know, I mean, that technically is the same scenario, here in Mexico as well. I carry around a letter. So I don't own my truck. My LLC owns it. So I do have the title and I have the original and I have actually been asked for it. And they want the paperwork showing that I have the right to be in possession of the vehicle and be driving it. So technically you could get stopped at the Mexican border as well.
Yeah.
And that's probably true of most countries, you know,
because
it's all about, you know, obviously making sure that you didn't steal the vehicle.
Correct.
And
there's a lot of.
Yeah. And there's a lot of states that. So like we are originally from Northern California and Northern California gives you your original title, even if you don't own the vehicle. But there's a lot of states that do not. Yeah, and our travel companions, well, they are from one of those states. So, yeah.
But and if you really think,
c'est la vie.
If you really think about it, though, it's a sensible reason for it. You would see a big increase in car theft. You'd see a lot of insurance fraud, a lot of that. So, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And the one thing you should really think about. When you're at the border, realize that you're not trying to get into your country. You're trying to get into somebody else's country.
Yeah.
Smile. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. What do I need to do?
Because I tell people that too. The more that you smile and the more that you are friendly, that, you know, you're going to be reciprocated. And quite frankly, the more you attempt in your worst possible way, in some cases, to communicate with their language, the better as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I have slaughtered the Spanish language.
Yep.
9 ways from Sunday.
Yep.
I try, but oh boy.
Yeah. Oh boy.
It's kind of sad that you guys have to make a point of saying that. You really just said you should show common decency and respect to the person that you're dealing with.
Exactly.
Yep. Yep.
So in March, I believe it's, March 25th, you know, there's the solar eclipse. Are you guys
April?
Is it April?
April. I believe it's April 4th.
I need to look it up. I'm sorry.
I'm absolutely positive it's April. I don't know if it's the 4th or the 8th, but I know it's April.
We did an actual whole show about it. So you would think I would know that. But do you guys have any plans for the solar eclipse? Are you going to still be?
Not at this point.
So we were originally going to just be getting back to the U.S., but those plans have changed a little bit. We really don't have to be back until later now. So I have absolutely no idea where we're going
to
be.
If I can talk her into going all the way to Ushuaia, I will.
That's not going to happen, but good thought.
Sounds good.
Well, it looks like you guys are in paradise right now.
Oh, it's so beautiful, Phil. I mean, Mexico was gorgeous.
Hello? It looks like
that. You go through.
I mean, sorry, what were you saying?
Could you
just froze up for a second, but you're back.
Ah, okay.
You go ahead. So many ecosystems in Mexico. One minute you're in a desert, you know, the next day, depending on how far you drive the day, you're in a rainforest, you know, surrounded by agave plants, thinking of the goddess of tequila.
Right.
But the one thing, my one thing with Mexico is there's so, kind of like Baja, there's just so much trash. It is just everywhere. Belize, there's some trash here and there, but it's nothing much less. Like that. Much less.
Yeah, it's weird. We were just having another YouTuber that I'm friends with. We were having this conversation, and it seems to be a cultural thing in the in Mexico. Similar to probably the way America was maybe 30 or 40 or 50 years ago. And it's just that they need a cultural shift. Some countries have really gotten control of that. Mexico, I agree with you guys, is definitely not one of them.
Yeah. They need to buy a whole fleet of garbage trucks.
Yeah. It's a sad problem.
And tractors, because they dump it all in one place. They just need to cover it with something so it doesn't blow away.
Yeah,
but other than that, we've met some of the most wonderful people in Mexico and then in Belize.
Yeah,
just that mix of, there's such a mix of cultures here. The Spanish, the original African Americans that were here, and then the Mayans. And that mix of cultures is so awesome, and the languages. And the food, it's been we have met the coolest people.
Talk about that a little bit, because I think maybe some of our listeners out there don't realize that Belize is actually the only Latin American, if you will, country that English is the main language.
Yeah, English is the main language, but another main language is Creole. So a lot of them speak Creole and English and Spanish.
And the two different, there's a bunch of different Mayan
dialects from Mayan.
But two specific Mayan dialects that are spoken here.
Oh, then you got Germans down here. Oh. You got Mennonites.
Canadians. Oh, huge, huge Mennonite. Matter of fact, as we were talking, a Mennonite carriage went by, pulled by horses.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, it's the only Central American country that speaks English. So it was an English colony. And then, I believe
so
in the
fairly
80s,
recently, actually,
81, it gained independence. So you have just this huge mix of cultures, and but it all just harmonizes together. So
And the people, it's so funny because it's. I met a guy the other day, little old guy. They were shopping, and we were talking. And he's like, you need no need to go to Belize City. Don't trust those people in Belize City. They're gangsters and thievers. And he's talking to me in that Rastafarian voice.
He was delightful.
Yeah, he was a great old guy. And then I met a guy we were at the Happy Manatee.
It's a Canadian couple that bought land here several years ago.
They rent spots for you to go, and it's super nice.
Yeah, they rent spots for overlanders.
We walked over the bar at the next resort over, and I was talking to this guy, and he's like, "Yeah, man, how do you like Belize?" And I was like, "It's gorgeous. Everybody's really nice." And he goes, "Oh, you know, trust every people in Belize." And I go, "Well, I understand that." But everybody has been super respectful, really
Welcoming.
And again, the food. I think I was Hispanic in a past life.
So
I got a couple questions. I know Phil's probably got a whole line of stuff. I want to ask, I want to go back a little bit to Mexico, because where I'm stationed right now, I've been able to communicate with a fair amount of people that have come across the border coming north from Guatemala. So I'm wondering, and I think you guys had posted, I've had multiple reports of people being stopped along that border on the Mexican side, mostly surrounding citizens trying to keep out illegal immigration, drugs, et cetera, whatever. I'm wondering what your experience with that was, and
we had a little experience with that.
A sketchy 24 hours. So we were going to the border crossing off 190, which is not the most southern, but it's almost the most southern.
I think it's the third up from
and at the end
third,
of
third east, I think.
At the end of 190, you have the border crossing. Well, obviously, like we talked before, we didn't get across there. Our friends didn't get across. So we went back because we didn't want them going back, because the town about, I don't know, 50 kilometers back.
Mm-hmm.
It's up by San Cristobal, Colón. It's like a eco place.
Yep.
But there's a little town.
There's a little town on the outside.
It's blockaded.
They've got the whole road blocked with semi rigs and buses, and they're not letting anybody but people from that area go through.
Yeah.
Well, they said they're trying to keep the bad people out. I did some research, and it was saying that they were trying to keep the cartels from coming through there, both the Guatemalan side and the Mexican side. Well, going towards Guatemala, they let us through to go to San Cristobal Colón to camp. We ended up getting bad tummy in San Cristobal de las Casas. So we were there for about 4 days getting better, and then we headed out. Well, for whatever reason, they let us go past to get to the border. So we went to the border, and one of the people that are traveling with us could not get their truck through. So we stayed behind with them because we knew they were going back. That because you're going three ways.
Safety in numbers.
Yeah.
And we knew that was going to be a big potential problem with that town being blockaded.
Yep. Yeah. So
plus they'd waited for us at the beginning of the
and they'd waited for us to come.
So yeah.
So we go back to that town, and there is no way, shape, or form. They were like, nope, you're not coming through. You weren't supposed to get through when you went through this morning. Those people that let you through are in trouble. So by this time, because we had been at the border for 3 or 4 hours, it was getting late. So we're like, there's only three ways. The way we were trying to go back through the Guatemalan border, or up to 11 through the Chiapas Islands. Well, we all know who runs the Chiapas Islands, the Sinaloa cartel, and then also some areas of the new generation Jalisco cartel. So we're like, we got to start to get late. We got to find a place to get off the road. So we started heading up, and this is all twisty, windy road. Super. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like 40 miles. It'll take you five hours.
Cliff on this side, mountain on this side, and road, and no side roads.
What made it even slower was we were hitting these little non-governmental
filter checkpoints.
Yeah.
Let me see your ID, this, that, and the other. Where are you going? Where are you coming from? Well, those are all
Yeah.
Cartel guys.
Yeah.
Well, we get to this town with a Pemex and we're like, maybe they'll let us stay in the parking lot. And so we get gas and we ask them, nope, can't stay here. So we're like, wow. So we'll just try to go as far as we can before it's dark.
And find a restaurant, say, hey, can we camp in your parking lot?
So we're pulling out of the Pemex and we hear bright as day, hey, where are you guys from? We look out the car and there's two Mexican guys sitting there. And one's kind of tatted up. The other is, his tats are covered. And we go, South Dakota. And he walks over and he's talking perfect English. And I'm going to leave his name out of it. But he's like, you know, and Deb's now, she's all excited. She's like,
maybe you can help us.
Do you speak English? And he goes, yeah, oh yeah, I used to live in the States. And so we're looking for a place to camp that's safe until in the morning. Oh yeah, you know, I control this area. I think I can help you. So he gets on the phone and he's talking Spanish and gets on the phone again. We're talking. And to make a long story short, he turns out to be a
barber. No, we're just going to not mention any of that.
He was.
He kept us safe.
Yeah.
He kept us safe. He found us a safe place.
He took us up on this mountaintop that was absolutely beautiful gorgeous.
Camp spot. And we were able to safely transition through that area the next morning and to a main road.
Yeah.
And that's, by the way, I mean, the reason I brought this up is that, you know, obviously, I think it's good for people that are traveling out there to understand sort of how life works. You know, I kind of knew where you were going to go, in fairness, and because I've heard this story multiple times, and many people have to understand that large portions of Mexico are not government controlled, for one. And there are all sorts of checkpoints all over the place. Some are official, some aren't. And, you know, like I said, I've talked to probably five different people that have transited different borders, actually, than the one you guys tried to get across. And it's the same scenario. And Phil and I talked about this on last week's podcast. A lot of this is related in many ways to what's going on at the Mexico's northern border, the U.S. border, and people's, not wanting the trafficking to go on, particularly on the human side of it. But, there's obviously a lot of those for people that haven't been there. And I have been to where you're talking about. They don't understand that, you know, in many cases, the cartel is able to control access points because of what you're saying. It's very remote. There's not side roads. There's one way in and out of a lot of areas that are very rugged. Right.
Yeah. The one we were in.
We call it a kill corridor in the military. But yeah.
I mean. Exactly.
If they wanted it to go another way, it could very well went another way, and it would have been all bad.
Sure.
But I kind of racked my head. Why? And, you know, at this point, what does it matter? You know, he did what he said he was going to do.
Sure.
He was an honorable man, and he got us safely.
And in most cases, that's the way it is, because, you know, you're not part of the equation, right? Like, those are not part of the equation. They don't want press. They don't want bad press. They just don't want any of that. That's not the deal.
They don't want any press.
That's right.
But, you know.
And then we got to the main road and got to experience all of the. Oh, yeah.
But let me just add to, at no time, and we've driven through Sinaloa, Durango, Chihuahua, several of the, you know, the narco held areas, and not one time have we got dirty looks or hostile looks, or even when we were driving through these towns up in the highlands, you know what we got was the look.
What are these gringos doing here?
The good thing for us was the day after we were there, They had a big shootout between the Sinaloa cartel and the new generation Jalisco, because in three of the towns we drove through.
So we were glad that we got through it.
Yeah.
But everybody, I've gotten several messages on Instagram about how is Mexico to Overland in? You know, are you worried about the cartels? And, you know, just because of what I used to do, there's always some apprehension.
Mm-hmm. Be smart.
Be smart.
Wave and smile a lot.
Yeah, you know.
We wave and smile at everybody.
And in many ways, use your gut, obviously. Your gut instinct is the best
way
to go.
Don't go down there. It's just like anywhere else. In the U.S., if you go somewhere you shouldn't go and doing things you shouldn't do, you're going to get jammed up.
Yep.
Well, down here is the same way.
And I think that's a safe thing to say. We hear so much from people, oh, Mexico's so dangerous, you don't want to go there. There's some places in the U.S. I don't want to drive and I don't feel safe in.
Absolutely.
Way more than Mexico in some cases. So. Yeah.
And really, honestly, the only difference between there and here is I can shoot back there.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, and that's, is that a good thing? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, you know, yeah.
But I've told them all, you know what? Mexico is gorgeous. Mexico, the people are awesome. The food is spectacular. And the toll roads are highway robbery.
Yes.
Yep. So let me ask you that question from an you segue good into the overlanding sort of world, because I know a lot of people are curious. Obviously, people, you know, spend a lot of time in the States and they spend a lot of time in Baja. How did you guys find both Mexico and Belize from a camping perspective? You know, talk about that a little bit. Is it campgrounds? Is it boondocking? Is it cheaper? Is it more expensive than the States, Baja, et cetera? What's the comparison?
Well, you're not going to find it. It's different.
It's different. You don't. Okay. So we can't stealth camp. So I think you have to make a differentiation here between those that can stealth camp and those that can't. Your van lifers, they can park in a lot of places, basically boondock.
Kind of like George in his Sprinter.
We can't stealth camp. It is abundantly obvious what we are doing.
Sure.
And being that some parts of Mexico, there's no BLM land.
Right.
So sometimes we're boondocking, but it's usually because you're asking somebody
if you can.
Can I camp here? It's not like the U.S. where it's like, okay, I have a map. I know this is BLM land. There's no signs that says I can't, so I can. Right.
But I mean, most of the, you know, the places that'll allow you to camp there, they're not that expensive.
Yeah.
150 pesos. Mm-hmm. You know, that's nothing. It's so, not like Baja, where if you can't find a dispersed camp spot, you shouldn't be doing it. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah, Baja.
Here, it's not like that.
Yeah, Baja has a lot more dispersed than at least we've been able to find in Mexico. And part of that might just be, again, because it's obvious what we're doing. We're setting up a tent. A tent's popping out of our trailer. And it's just been easier for us to follow places other people have camped. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a campground, but it's somebody's front yard or backyard.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of like this, where we're at now. It's a business. They do zip lines. They do, you can get in a balloon and go down the river.
Yeah.
An inner tube. Well, this is right in front, under a bridge right next to a river. They own the land.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, go ahead and stay there.
Yeah. And that was my experience. That's why I'm asking. That was my experience. It was less boondocking and a little bit more campgrounds. Although I found that campgrounds were cheaper than the ones in Baja, the organized campgrounds.
Yeah. That is true.
Yeah. I think the most expensive one we stayed at was like 250 pesos a night, per person, not per rig.
A lot of stuff here is per person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
another thing we've noticed in more of the southeastern part of Mexico, they're really not used to seeing overlanding vehicles.
You would think they would be, but they're not.
Belize is the same way. Belize, we are an anomaly here. So we have actually met several places, Lamanai Eco Tours, wonderful place. They had let some people stay in their back lot. And then we came and we're like, you know, the guy's like, so what do you guys need? What do you overlanders need? And we have since, well, even in Mexico, we had that conversation.
With several places.
One of the places where they had us park, if they had had people in the little cabins, we wouldn't have been able to park there. But they had this beautiful open area that you could even get your rig into if they did a little tree trimming. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I said, that area would be perfect for overlanders. And she said, well, we were thinking about it, but we'd have to build a bathroom and a shower. And I said, well,
not really.
Not really.
I
said, we have our own toilet. We have our own shower. We carry our own. And she's like, so it was an educational experience.
And the food, Mikey. Oh my God.
So
we ate there the whole time we were there,
so
but I gained like 5 pounds.
But she had no idea. So I said, you know, overlanders, all we need is a relatively flat area. And we're good. We have all of our own stuff. And I said, and if they want to, let them walk into the part where you have the communal bathroom and the communal shower area. And they can walk in there and use that. And she was just like, oh, I had no idea. So it's kind of a, and again, at the place Happy Manatee, we were able to share with that Canadian couple, wonderful people, by the way, what overlanders need and don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
oftentimes what they want is a potentially somewhere to dump a toilet, a cassette toilet or something, and get water sometimes. So
yep, exactly.
Water is a little harder for them because they're on a rain catchment system.
But at the Happy Manatee,
but they do have a gray or a black water tank dump.
Unlike Baja, which is pretty used to seeing overlanding vehicles.
Yeah. You said, a lot of the overlanders that I've spoken to, particularly the ones that are doing the Pan American Highway, they tend to go down Baja. They take the ferry. They go down the west coast of mainland Mexico, and then they cross into Guatemala. Very few of them go to the Yucatan or even Mexico City, basically east, or Belize.
Oh, they're missing out.
Totally agree. Yeah,
the Tabasco region, the Tabasco region, the Yucatan, the one in between the two. I can't remember. But anyway, they're beautiful. The little pockets of rainforest. The beaches are gorgeous.
I mean, it actually worked out in our favor that they couldn't get through because we saw a lot more than we would have otherwise.
Something good always comes out of adversity. And, you know, like he said, there's things we would not have seen if they didn't get turned around at that border. There are experiences that have enriched us that we would not have had we not been turned around.
And the one thing I could tell people, and this is kind of off what we've been talking about, but four in line, if you're going to go down in a group, really know the people you're going with. Because
great point.
You're gonna potentially face adversity with them.
And you learn a lot about people when you're traveling together. You know,
it's super hard. I mean, I've caravaned with people, and you know, I kind of like to keep my Phil and I have traveled together. We travel fine together, but you know, you got to keep the group small. You know, maybe two trucks, maybe three trucks at the most, in my opinion. And it's a lot smoother when you really know the people, like, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the people we're with now, We get along fine.
Yeah.
I mean, we have our quirks. They have their quirks. But, you know, we had another group with us that, you know, they're all right. But
yeah,
I can't say I'd want to travel with them again.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying anything bad about them.
No.
So you guys didn't take the traditional route through Baja. You went over to Mexico and went down like we were discussing. What was the highlight? What if you were to give one, two, maybe three things that were highlights that you would give to somebody to say this is a good reason to take this route?
Oh,
wow. You know, this is always my hardest question. What are the highlights? What is the favorite place you've ever been? Because there's so many, it's really hard.
Well, let me ask an easier question. On your next trip there, what's a place you're definitely going to go back to and explore?
Yucatan. Yeah. Yucatan's been my favorite.
And why do you say that?
There's just so much stuff to see there. You got the Yucatan, the state of Yucatan. You've got Tabasco right outside of that. I mean, you've got tons of ruins within 25 miles.
And you've got so many Mayan ruins in such a small area.
Yeah.
You can follow prehistory, basically.
Yeah. If that's your gig, I mean, you would be in heaven in the Yucatan.
In a 2-day period of time,
we saw about six.
We saw like six different ruins from different time periods in the Mayan occupation of the area. That was really cool. And then I think the chocolate plantation in Tabasco.
The thing that made the biggest impression on me was at Teotihuacan. We stayed. There's a camp. There's a guy that lets people camp in his yard and on the property next door. And it's like a 600-meter walk from his place to Teotihuacan. So we went out there, spent the whole day there, and we got back and he was showing us around his property. Well, it turns out he is a...
Like a shaman?
For the Mezcal Teotihuacan sweat lodge thing. Well, so we went and did that. It's like a 4-hour ceremony to get rid of evil spirits.
So the way Mike comes up to me, he goes, "Hey babe, you want to go do a sweat lodge thing and get a massage?" I'm thinking, you know, you go sit in the sauna, you know, drink some orange juice, go have a massage.
It is so much more.
So much more.
You didn't know the evil was coming out of you.
I couldn't talk for 5 days after.
It was an amazing experience.
And you know me,
experience.
I never shut up.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience.
No, it was an awesome experience. And the guy, he thanked us. He said a lot of people stay there, but nobody really wants to do the ceremony. And I mean, it's pretty intense, but I would recommend anyone go do it just because you get to see, because he does it exactly the way they did it back in the day.
So what's been the most difficult thing about travel so far? Is it economics? Is it social?
Things are more expensive. Gas is more expensive than we had imagined. Part of that is gas got more expensive. Part of that is we move too often.
Yeah.
So when we were budgeting, gas has been probably twice what we initially thought it would be.
We've stayed at places, you know, 4 or 5 days at a time. But the initial coming down and getting to like the Yucatan, we were moving every day.
But I think he means in general, not just Mexico.
Oh, okay.
And then the other would be family.
Yeah.
You miss family and family misses you.
Yeah. Everybody thought we were nuts when we sold everything.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, you're doing what? You're selling your house and doing what? So.
Who had the weirdest reaction to that?
My mom. My mom. My mom. My mom is the quintessential grandma. She is like.
She's a stalker.
She has to have all of her little chicks safely. So she does not like the fact that we are not. I mean, we lived four houses down from her. So this was a huge change of us now completely gone out of the state. And she worries about everybody. And so when we travel places like this,
I generally text her and say, hey, mom, we got to our camp.
We're still alive. She Life 360 stalks us so that she can see us moving and know we're still alive.
Yeah. My sister just said I was stupid. You're doing what?
I got a few of those.
Yeah. But she says she's glad I'm happy. And this is the happiest I've been in years.
And how long have you guys been on the road again?
2.5 years.
Almost 3 years.
So yeah, when I thought it was, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So when I first met you, you guys hadn't started on the road yet. I met you guys the first year of Overland Expo in Colorado.
We had just started.
Just barely started, I think, when we met you.
Because we started, but she still had to go back to work for one day. And that's because she won. It was a tradition in her station or in the fire department that your last day you either cook for the crew or you dine. You got stuff brought in.
It's like your last day. Everybody shows up, says goodbye to you.
Yeah. So
plus my department doesn't allow to take terminal leave, which means burning all of your vacation and sick leave at the very end of your career.
Yeah, what are they going to do? Retire?
So I burned all of my vacation and sick leave, but it wasn't terminal leave because I came back for one day. So
I have a question for both of you guys. You know, being in the careers that you were in, law enforcement, fire department, military, all kind of in the same range of career, same lifestyle. Was it a weird or hard transition to go from that lifestyle to not getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, not having rules and regulations?
Mike had been retired for quite a while prior to us doing this from that career. And so for me, it was weird in the sense that I kept waiting to get the phone call to say, hey, your vacation's over. You got to come back to work. Cause I've had a tax paying job since I was 16 years old. I've always worked. So yes, in that sense, but no, in the sense that I was 35 years in the emergency medical field and in the fire, most of that in the fire department. I was ready to be retired. I was ready to not be responsible for mitigating other people's disasters any longer. So yeah. It was kind of a big relief, really, of I only have to be responsible for a much smaller set of situations now.
I wasn't ready to go at the time. I didn't have any choice. But, you know, you always hear about PTSD and all these other things. And if you would have told me when I was younger that someday I would be retired and had PTSD, I would have said, you're stupid. Well, here I am. And I can tell you one of the best things that's happened to me is this lifestyle. If I had... No. It is just really because it gets you back into being self-sufficient. You know, you've got a problem solve. If you're out here and something breaks, I don't know of a Toyota dealership close to me anywhere. So I better be able to fix this.
And it's very freeing.
And it's very freeing, yes. You know, people said, well, you're selling your house. And that seems really sketchy at first, I'll be honest with you. But mm-hmm. you know how, well, Mike knows.
Oh, yeah.
It's very freeing. It's very,
so
I hate
that. I get the question a lot, so I'm sure you guys do.
Oh, yeah.
How long are you going to do it for?
We don't know. Until we're not having fun.
Until it's not fun anymore.
You know, I mean, unless we see a property that is just exactly what we're looking for, and basically they want to give it to us, you know?
Until, yeah. Number one, we're thoroughly enjoying this lifestyle.
We love it.
Yeah. And number two, the interest rates and housing prices are stupid right now. So,
yeah,
I can camp my happy little butt on a piece of BLM land for 14 days and go drive to some other beautiful national forest place and stay there for 14 days. And
yeah, you know, we get people all the time. Well, what do you like about it? For me, and I've never thought I would say this because, you know, in my career, I dealt with nothing but the underbelly of society. At least you got to meet some nice people now and then. It's given me, I really enjoy meeting new people. I mean,
you really learn
that everybody's just pretty much the same. They just want to raise their family. They want to do a good job and live their life, a happy life.
There's so much divisiveness in today's world. Well, let me rephrase that. What is shown to the world through various means? So seems to portray this huge divisiveness. What we have found is, with some exceptions, mostly people just want to be happy and live their lives and not be pestered. And, you know, that's the biggest thing we've found, is through so many different cultures, through different areas of the United States, Canada, Mexico. For the most part, people just want to be people and be happy and have good experiences with other nice people.
And that's what we've seen throughout Mexico, throughout Belize,
everywhere,
throughout Canada.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, well, I've found that most people, if you take politics out of the conversation,
we're
pretty much all on the same board. If you ask them social, ethical, and moral questions, they're generally all the same. When you throw in politics, then all of a sudden people are on the left or the right or the red or the blue or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. Absolutely. Yep. Politics needs to just go away.
It's one of the reasons I'm considering staying out of the United States. For this is going to be an interesting year for sure. Phil and I talked about this last week's podcast.
Oh, I know, boy. I watched it.
Yeah, we watched it and we're like, yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, we agree with you completely.
We're going to watch more of these.
Yep.
If people would keep that in mind when they're traveling too, I think their demeanor towards the people they interact with would be different. That particular country, you listen to what their politicians are spewing is one thing, but that doesn't necessarily mean the people in that country feel that way or think that way.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the case in Canada.
If you listen to the news, and again, we won't get into it, but what you hear on the news and what you hear when you talk to basically every Canadian we've talked to, it's a very, very different.
It's totally different.
Totally different.
Totally different.
We, when we relay to them our thoughts and our feelings, and they're like, man, that's not what you see on the news. And we're like,
that's why I don't watch the news.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I know. I'm surrounded right now. I'm camped. Virtually everybody I'm camped with here is Canadian. And yeah, it's not like what you hear.
I tell people all the time, they say, how are the people that you met in Baja?
I'm Canadian.
Like, I've got to tell you, I said, I met more Canadians in Baja than I met in Canada.
Yeah.
So, but you can't blame them because, like, it's frozen right there right now. Right. So
that's right.
Well, I listen to Canadian news. I get it on YouTube. And usually whatever the Canadian news is saying, when I talk to actual Canadians, it's the exact opposite. Not even a little different. I mean, it's on the news, I'm not going to mention names. They're pushing. They keep up with American politics more than we do.
Yeah, they do.
And the news is pushing one person, and I've never heard that name from any person that's actually a Canadian.
Right.
So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
That's true. Yep.
But then again, that happened here, but I won't get into that either.
Exactly. That's for another podcast.
That's for the Tear Your Hair Out podcast.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting year of podcasts, I'm going to tell you.
Well, on your last podcast, we heard you talking about the leaving politics out of it, the migrant trains.
Yeah.
When we came down off of 211 onto 200, which goes up to the southernmost border of Guatemala, hundreds of migrants walking down the sides of the highway. And it was funny because, one, that they were all carrying brand new cell phones. Two, there were more checkpoints that we saw in the whole trip down to that area. And these white vans would pick them up right after the checkpoints, right out of sight of the checkpoint, and then drive them.
So right before the next checkpoint.
And dump them out.
Drop them off. They disappear.
And then they would leapfrog down the highway that way.
That and the fact that
we saw,
let's just say that a good majority of the people that we saw were not from South Central America or
Haitians,
Mexico,
most likely.
Not from South America, China, or Central America.
Yeah.
And not families for the most
part. These were all younger men.
You don't get on the news, right? In the States, you're not going to get that story. It's reality.
Now we did.
Deb met a couple in a store, and I'll let her tell you the story.
So we went, once we got away from that and started to go inland more, we needed to find a butcher shop because we needed some more protein. And in the butcher shop, we met this young, I mean, like very early 20s, couple from Venezuela, and we thought they were from that town, and then they started saying they were telling us their story, and I said, oh, you're pretty far east from where the rest are, and he was like, yeah, he goes, that's not a good group to travel with. He goes, we didn't feel safe, and so we came more east, and they're making their way without being in that corridor.
Mm-hmm.
They're from Venezuela, and he's traveling with his either wife or girlfriend. These are people fleeing badness.
Yeah.
I mean, actual asylum seekers.
Yeah.
But a big portion of the others that we saw, again, were from countries other than South and Central America, and there were no families. And that was
there were a few.
Slightly disturbing.
There were a few families, but not
a lot has to do with the money, right? So, I mean, and one of the reasons they have all these new cell phones is that's part of the deal. You know, they've got to come up with X dollars to be, quote, transported. And, you know, you'll get a cell phone out of this and you get this and this. And but, I mean, the reality is many of them are getting taken advantage of. Certainly, you know, they're ferrying them up and various organizations, cartels and whatnot are getting them through the
dirty. Sell them off to a work farm.
It was an eye opener. Because to actually be there and see it with your own eyes, it gives it a whole different flavor.
And I can tell you what, and this is, I'm not bashing the Mexican government, but honestly, the only people we saw doing shit, excuse my language, probably shouldn't say that on the podcast.
We've used that word.
But the Mexican authorities, the police, not doing anything about these migrants. We did see the federales, the Guardian Nacional Guardia.
Yeah.
They had snatched up a van load of them and they were jamming them up. But they would get probably from here like 50 yards away from the checkpoint and dump these people out of the van.
Yeah.
It's not like you can't see it.
It was interesting.
No, and one of the problems is very much like the states. There's not coordination necessarily between the federals and the local, and there's a lot of apathy. And quite frankly, a lot of it is, being leaned on by the U.S. administration. You know, the Americans lean heavily on Mexico to, in some ways, to not do anything. You know, there's been a long history of bullshit. I agree with what you said.
Oh, absolutely. But
you notice Mike has been itching himself over here. We got we got eaten alive by the little no see them. Those things are evil. And mosquito netting does not help.
No, we were at that Happy Manatee. And if you ever come down here, go see Ralph and his wife.
Cynthia.
Great people.
But pray for wind. And if buy the little mosquito coils.
Because that and coconut oil. That keeps them from biting you. But they were terrible. I normally don't get touched by mosquitoes. Dude, I am eaten up.
And it was just the one day. We spent three nights there. Yeah. And it was wonderful on the ocean. But then there was no wind and we got eaten.
But
it happens.
Yeah,
it's the tropics.
I would tell anybody that's thinking about coming down to Mexico is come. Don't let the State Department tell you it's too dangerous. Take it with a grain of salt, because mostly what they're going to tell you is they give you what they want you to not think.
Yeah.
Look at the advisories and go, what was Chiapas, South Chiapas?
It was only at like a 2.
Yeah, it was a level 2.
Like, I think I would have made this a 4.
And it could be one of the toughest places, honestly.
Now, again.
And some of the others that they had is at 3s.
Yeah.
Sinaloa
as an example. I mean, Sinaloa, you go through Mazatlan or you go through any of those places, they're fine. There's not much going on.
Yeah, and they just had a shooting in Tulum.
I saw that on the
shootout, and a civilian got hit, American.
Yeah,
We stayed away from Tulum, not because we were worried about that. It would be more the petty stealing that happens down there.
We try to avoid the tourist areas.
Yeah,
as a general rule.
But I would tell people if they come down here, for sure, lock things up on your vehicle. They know what the stuff is. They may not have seen a rig like this, but they know it's worth money and they know they can sell it.
So talk about that.
Guys, are you guys on your own now or are you still?
We had the podcast. So we just actually went to go see this, had a great tour of the spice farm. That was wonderful, but we had the podcast, so we came back to the camp spot, and our travel partners, they went to go see one of the ruins.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then they'll be back here this evening.
So guys, you just mentioned about security and your vehicle. What are you guys using to protect your valuables when you walk away or you maybe go to the store or whatever?
Well, we don't walk away. So the biggie is if we're at the only time we ever leave our vehicle alone is if we're camped someplace that we feel that it is secure to leave it there.
Yeah, like there's a place in outside of Merida, two
Mexican travelers.
Yeah, base camp.
I thought you guys were using a strong box or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Number one, we generally one of us stays with the vehicle. Like he doesn't like to shop anyway, so when we go grocery shopping, he stays. Plus, we have the dog. So that is a whole nother issue. But we do have a Boss strong box that locks the back of our vehicle.
So it locks all my tools up. And then we have another Boss strong box for the center console where our valuables are kept.
So we've got two ways to lock all of our goodies.
And
those are, both of them are from Boss strong box.
I have two Pelican BX55 cases on the roof. Each with it is double locked for my spare parts, and the other one's for recovery gear. And then I've got a Pelican, the lighter weight one, the air case for my camera gear that I have bolted down to my my Goose Gear platform, and it's double locked.
So it sounds like your basic security strategy is the strong boxes and to actually never have your vehicle out of your sight.
Yes.
Or be someplace that we're staying that we feel confident, like the place in Merida, the eco place that we were in Mexico, and the eco place we were here in Belize. We left the vehicles, the one in Belize, and went on a night river tour that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I would not, when you're down here, if you can have two people where, like, when one person goes into the store, the other person can sit out and watch the vehicle, that's optimum. But if you don't have that opportunity, then you find, you know, you don't park way out in the parking lot. You park up closer where there's more traffic, you know. I don't care whether you're in Mexico or you're in America, thieves don't want to be seen.
And have something, especially the traveling we do, have something in your vehicle that locks.
Yeah. I have tinted, very tinted windows in my truck. So you really, I mean, you got to put your face right up to the window to see inside. I think that's one of the best things you can do. Because most people that are stealing, they're doing it. It's an opportunistic thing.
And be smart. Don't leave your purse. You know, if you're don't leave valuable things in easy view of, hey, if I break this window, I can grab this and be gone in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Be smart. And that's anywhere. That's not Mexico. That's most of the U.S. So
your Toyota is pretty set up. It's set up pretty well for almost anything.
Yeah.
How much has it been a part or integral towards your travel? Could you have gone with maybe less? Would you have been able to do the things you're doing stock?
Yes. I think with when we first started this, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And so I didn't know whether I wanted to be a rock crawler or I wanted to be just a plain overlander. And after paying for one fender and one door and
after breaking
CB axles,
what he's saying is after breaking some things,
you know, I figured it out. But during that time, you know, steel bumpers, steel skids. And now she is, you know, 8,000 pounds.
Right.
I would tell people be very, and especially on Toyotas, be very cognizant of weight. If you're not going to be doing rock, be a rock crawler, then anything you can get aluminum, get aluminum.
We just switched from our old underbody armor to Asphere's aluminum armor. Under Armour. We lost
65 pounds,
but we gained, so we didn't have the fuel tank covered with our old steel because it was just way too heavy. Well, we gained the gas tank cover with Asphere's aluminum system.
Yeah.
And we lost 65 pounds.
And I'm gonna
and we've still balanced it off of rocks and skidded it off of rocks, and it's been money.
Yeah, I mean every modification you do has a price to pay. You know, because it's so heavy, I had to get a big the power brake, big brake kit up front, because I didn't have enough stopping power.
I think I'd have wanted that anyway after learning about them, just because we're pulling the trailer.
Yeah.
And they've saved our, they've
saved our bacon several times.
They've saved
times.
Our bacon from a caribou that jumped out in front of us, and from a vehicle that decided that it really wanted to be in the lane right in front of us at the absolute last second. So Mike had to step on the brakes rather hard both times.
Yeah, they've been very integral too, because we're so heavy. And if you're towing a trailer, I would say it's a good idea. But
yeah, Mike,
the heavier hold on.
No, go you ahead, can sir. Finish. I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
No, the heavier we've gotten, you know, every modification you do affects other parts. So what I would tell people, if you know, I'm one of those guys, I love gear. And I love anything that's going to help me do more. Well, I don't know when to stop. So hence, you know, you look at my truck and, you know, I can go anywhere I point it, but what's the cost? Right now, when we get back at a certain point, I'm going to have to change my rear diff to a Dana 360 because, you know, it has 5,000 pounds hanging over it. And that's $5,000.
Which brings me back to the brakes. I think power brakes are pretty good. It kind of blows my mind. You know, I interview a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people. And I rarely hear people discussing brake upgrades. And we drive around some of the most heavy vehicles in the world. We put all this stuff on them. And that's the last thing that people think about is their brakes.
And it should be the first thing that they think about.
Well, and if you really think about it, when the state or the transportation authority of the United States, you know what I'm talking about, when they put a GVRW on a vehicle, it's in big part is based on your suspension and your braking. Well, my suspension's completely redone. I mean, down to everything, and then, you know, my brakes are all redone.
Front and back.
But as my truck got heavier, especially when we had the trailer on board, between the trailer and the truck, we're 12.5. And going down, you know, when we were doing the Continental Divide Trail, we were coming down some of those super steep descents in the San Juans. And yeah, there were a few times I was puckering because I could feel the brakes heating up. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I told Deb, we're just going to have to suck it up. And so I started looking at different braking companies. And the only one that was really developed around off-roading was Power Brake. Everybody else was started out with on-the-road vehicles, on-the-road racing vehicles. But Power Brake started to build brake kits for Dakar Rally vehicles. And we got that. We paid for our front kit, and you don't need a rear kit because 68% of your break-ins in the front anyways.
But the rear kit has made a measurable difference.
I have their D-line kit in the back, and it has made a difference. Now I have to disclaimer, we're semi sponsored by Power Brake, but I purchased our X-Line big kit in the front. But I would tell anybody, if you're getting heavy or you're towing something, really look into it, because you don't realize.
Stopping's kind of important.
Yeah.
When you need to.
What are you guys using to talk to us right now? Are you on Starlink?
We are on Starlink. Which our travel couple that we went to,
you froze up.
Starlink. and they told him that it would not work in Belize or Guatemala, Belize or Nicaragua. And so we're like, oh, okay, well, we won't have Starlink in Belize. Well, then I forget what I was looking up, and I found a website that of users that said, no, it'll work just fine. You just can't buy it from there, and it can't be linked to an address from there.
And so, I can tell you, we get better signal here than we do
in the States. So it's working perfectly fine in Belize, and I expect if we make it to Nicaragua, it'll work perfectly fine there as well.
The other day,
it has 100% coverage in Central America. It's 100%. Yeah. Those two countries you can't buy it in.
You can't buy it.
I'm telling you, the other day, I did a speed check, and the download was 290. And the upload was like 50.
Yeah. I get that here sometimes, actually. It's like, yeah. I set a record a couple of weeks ago. I hit 305.
Wow.
Wow. But yeah. So, I mean, and we've got the high performance unit now. And so it'll even work if we have some minor tree cover, which our other one, if there were trees in the vicinity, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Well, this podcast is the proof in the pudding. You know, both of you guys are on Starlinks.
Yeah.
I'm getting crystal clear signals from you guys. And because we're all in three different places, it's being sent to a server and then it's being sent out. And I'm still getting this crystal clear picture. So that means you guys are getting a really strong signal.
Yeah,
and I don't get that from some people who live in a house.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I texted you, I had done a speed check, and it was like 208, I think, and then a 70 something. Now Mike's doing it right now, but we have been very, very happy. When we first got Starlink, it was before they worked above the 58th parallel. So our first trip to Canada, it definitely cut off when we got higher up into the Northern Territories, but now that's not the case any longer. All of Canada's covered. And our last year when we did Eastern Canada, we tested that theory. We tested that out and we had Starlink the entire trip, no problems.
So you guys said that you're going to be staying in one place a little bit more often.
Oh yeah.
When we get back to the States, absolutely.
So what kind of power system are you guys using? Do you have a power or batteries or anything like that?
He's running his little thingy. So we have Battleborne batteries. They're a lithium and we have their 100 amp hour internally heated. So they're basically, they sense when it gets down to 36 degrees and they turn a tiny little heater on so that you don't have to worry about whether you're discharging or oh yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Right.
Great. Anyways,
we run one of those in our truck and two of them in the trailer. And then we power those with a variety of, we have different panel on the trailer, on the truck, and then we have
on the truck, we have a Red Arc Manager 30. And then I also have my S-Pods to do all my accessory management.
And then the trailer comes with a Red Vision.
Right. And then on the roof of the truck, I have a 100-watt Renogy solar panel. And then I wired in an external panel. So if we're under trees, I can put it out.
And it's a little fourth D folder that we love.
And then our trailer came with the Red Vision, the Red Arc Red Vision with 120 watt Red Arc panel on the roof.
Approximately how many miles do you have on that trailer now?
On the trailer?
Oh, geez.
Over 100,000.
Yeah.
I figured that.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally
we bought it in 2020.
It's been to every state except Hawaii.
Yeah.
We've overlanded Hawaii, but not with the truck and trailer. So every single state, it's been back and forth across the United States.
At least six times.
It's been all the way up to Tuktoyaktuk.
We've done every province in Canada except Nunavut.
None of it, because you can't drive there. So, yeah.
So.
A lot of miles.
One of my pet peeves is you go on YouTube to look at a product and see a review of it. And the guy just got it last week and just got it out of the box or just had it delivered, whatever the product is. And he's telling you how great it is. So I would love to hear what you think about your trailer after 100,000 miles. I think that'd be far more valuable than any of these other reviews I see.
So we love it. It was designed to be in the outback of Australia. And it has performed flawlessly for us. Now, I have to have a caveat to that. We did break an axle, but that was our fault. So we got some not so awesome advice on what size tires and offset wheels that you could put on it. And we put 35s with an offset, and the Cruisemaster suspension was not designed for that. And it brought the load out too far, and we snapped an axle in.
We snapped a stub axle.
Snapped the stub axle in Canada. Patriot Camper took care of us. They shipped the whole new swing arm
and brake drums assembly from Queensland to BC.
Hope, BC to the campground that we were staying at. The little FedEx gal drove up to our campsite. We unloaded the stub axle
and then we
installed the stub axle in the campsite with the campsite gave us these big rounds of, was it oak or I don't know, big stumps that they brought to us to prop everything up. So
we could still sleep in the trailer.
But other than that, this thing has just, it's been everywhere, and with a very minimum amount of maintenance, it just does everything we need it to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think my biggest thing is, and I'm hoping that's changing with the advent of their headquarters in Las Vegas. But before, getting spare parts for it was super hard,
virtually impossible. But I think that's changing now that they have an actual Patriot Camper headquarters in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
I saw that. Yeah.
So
yeah. So
go ahead, Phil.
Now, I was just going to say, me and Mike have covered this before. We did a show where we listed the 10 most researched subjects in overlanding. And believe it or not, one of the top 10 is, how do you poop? So I'm asking you guys that.
I will take that, since pooping while camping is, generally speaking, and I hate this from a sexist point of view, is generally the woman is needing that comfort item. So we started out with the bucket. Mike has a bad back, and the bucket is very tippy.
Yeah.
So that didn't work out. Plus, they're a pain in the butt to store.
Yeah.
So then we went to the little three-legged thing, and
we tried it. We never even had one.
Yeah, he tried it. He couldn't get up off of it.
Yeah, my knees felt like they were going to explode.
Yeah.
So then we found the Thunderbox. also an Australian product, but there's a distributor in the U.S. And the Thunderbox, if you guys have never seen the Thunderbox before, look it up. It folds down to like an inch thickness. And the size, you know, basically a square like this and an inch thick.
It's more like that.
And it pops out to be the size of a regular toilet.
Oh, yeah. It's close to your throne.
And it's got 4 points of contact with Mother Earth because it's a little cube. And so it's super stable.
I love it.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, our super special 24 hours in the Chiapas Highlands, everybody else had the Montezuma's Revenge, and I had a super like mild version, but I was all like, oh, I didn't get it. I have a cast iron stomach. I should have knocked on wood more frequently because I had the most beautiful view while I was utilizing my Thunderbox to take care of Montezuma's Revenge in the Chiapas Highlands in sketchy conditions.
But I'm telling you, it is.
It's awesome.
I got pooping issues. And I'm going to tell you, I love the thing. She did a little alteration.
So one of the first times we had it, we were somewhere where it was quite chilly, and I got up to utilize it and about froze my butt cheeks to it. Now that's only if you're in some place where it's super, super cold, but I ended up going, okay, I need to fix this. So Rest Stop makes those little padded seats to put on top of the 5-gallon buckets. So I bought one of those. I went to Home Depot, bought the cheapest toilet seat I could find, cut the top off of it, and sanded it so that the top would fit and seal on the padded seat. And then I used a bicycle tire inner tube to make a hinge.
Yep.
So now I have a padded throne with a lid on my Thunderbox.
It is a game changer if you don't have something like you have, Mike.
And then for all you ladies out there, look at the Venus to Mars or the Peace style, which, I mean, not to just put it out there, it basically lets you pee standing up like a dude so that you don't have to drop your drawers and get your butt chewed on by skeeters.
And we use the best, in my opinion, my humble opinion, we use the best. We used to have a quick pitch shower tent,
which we loved.
We loved it, but it didn't have a floor and it didn't have a roof. When we ran into Taruka USA at Expo East, and we saw theirs and sold our quick pitch and bought it, it is the best shower/pooper tent on the planet.
In our humble opinion.
In our opinion.
Because it has a roof. So I can poop if I get rained on.
Yep. I mean, this is what we do. We absolutely love it.
And sometimes that's how it is. Phil was right. People will be like doing a review on something they just got 3 days ago. I mean, it takes traveling on the road for some amount of time very often to discover what works and what doesn't. You know, you just don't know until you do it.
Yeah. We've gotten rid of so much gear. The table that goes on your wheel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a great product.
Yep.
It didn't work for our needs.
Yep.
I ended up selling it to somebody else and they love it. They use it all the time.
They use it every time they go.
It just didn't work for us in the way we do things.
And you learn that. And like you said, when you give, like we have some very core pieces of equipment that we use every day that we rely on. Our battle-borne batteries, those things have been...
I will never go away.
Flawless. Absolutely flawless. Our Thunderbox, our Strongbox, we were crash test dummies for them when they first broke into the... They made Strongboxes for police at, steal, and they wanted to break into the Overlanding market. and they already had a relationship with Mike because, his past, one of the jobs he got after he retired was gun rep. So he had one of their steel boxes. And when they made the aluminum box,
this is not aluminum, it's 16-gauge steel.
I'm sorry, it's not aluminum, it's still steel, it's just thinner, but so it's much lighter. And we were basically their crash test dummies of go see if you can break this, which we did. And we got back with them, hey, here's where we broke it, here's why we think it broke. And boy, boom, they came out with the next version.
Yeah.
And super responsive.
American company.
Yeah. Wagon Tech, family owned company here in the US. Some of their stuff is made overseas, but all their product development is done here. They have some of the best lighting things for like flashlights.
Yeah, I have.
And
they're so supportive of the Overland community.
Their latest little thing, that little thing that goes around your neck and has the lights. I love that thing because I hate it when you've got a headlamp on and you're blinding everybody.
Yeah.
Whereas this thing just hangs around your neck, sits here like this, and you can see everything and not blind everybody.
Right.
And then their little cube. Oh my gosh, I've charged everything with their little Wagon Tech cube.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's those core companies, the Power Breaks some of them were sponsored by, but we didn't become sponsored by them until we used their stuff and beat their stuff up and it worked for us. Except for Battleborn Battery, which we had done a lot of research.
Hours and hours and hours of research. And I had talked to their customer service. And
we knew we wanted them. And we thought, let's put a proposal in.
All they do is say yes or no.
Yes or no. And it worked out that we were a good fit for them. And they have been an amazing fit for us.
And I can tell you one thing. Before we had a relationship, I told them right up front, I was just window shopping. And they treated me like I was going to buy right that moment.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a company that has had that good of customer service. And for me, I don't know about you guys, that goes a long way for me because that tells me what kind of service I'm going to get after I buy the product. Yeah. When we were looking at the Patriot Camper, we looked at, it came down to the Patriot Camper or the Turtleback Expedition. And when we looked at the Turtleback Expedition, it was a little too tall for both of our likings. And hence some of them have rolled since then. They're great trailers. I'm not bad mouthing. But the guy we talked to really didn't have a lot of knowledge about the product. We went over to Patriot Campers and we ended up talking with Matt from Expedition, whatever.
When they still handled the importation.
Right. And he was talking to us and I spent 45 minutes talking to Justin's wife, the owner, one of the owners of Patriot Camper. How many big companies, does that? Well, then I talked to Matt and I'm like, as he's telling us all about the trailer, I was like, wait a minute, I got a bone to pick with you because I don't leave anything out there. I just say what I'm going to say. And kind of like Phil. And I go, why should I spend $50,000 with you when my wife's tried to get a hold of you 7 times just to find out what size the dang mattress is?
Yeah.
I mean, what does that say about when I have a problem? And he gets on his phone. And he's like, and I was fully expecting him to blame it on an employee. And he goes, nope, that's my fault. We just had a server changeover and I dropped the ball.
We'll give you guys a little inside info about Patriot Campers.
Yep.
When they were introducing their product to America, I met Justin and worked with him on directing the little footage that they did introducing the vehicle at Overland Expo. And I followed him around and we did a tour of Expo. And at the time, he did not have any one for imports to America. And he was looking for someone. I actually have it on film when he met Matt.
Oh, yeah.
But what I was getting to was he actually took people through a process. It was very important to him who he chose as that first person that was going to be importing his vehicles. So it's not by happenstance that you just lucked up and Matt was okay. He was screened.
Yeah, we
love it. The trailers. The only modification we've really made on our trailer.
We changed the batteries out.
Well, changed the batteries out, but that's just because we sillily got it with gel batteries and not lithiums. But they used to make it so it was hard plumbed. The propane was hard plumbed to the stove. Mm-hmm. But because of all the regulations with Canada's provinces, they ran into problems with that and then shipping it over to the United States. So I have since drilled holes and have plumbed it. And then we ended up having in Baja, actually, a gust of wind destroyed the awning. And it was easier for us to get a different awning than it was to try and get a new awning from Patriot. So we ended up with
Overland Pros
awning. And that's really the only...
Oh, you did the direct or the filter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't like the way the water fills. The vent hose has too many little turns to make. So it was really slow to fill. So I put a bottom fill system on it. But other than that, that's really the only thing that I've had to change. And if anybody knows me, they know that I like projects and I like to fiddle with things and get them exactly how I want them.
Yeah, the truck's supposed to be my domain and the trailer's hers.
So the fact that I've really only changed three things on the trailer really says something about the build quality of that trailer.
Yeah.
So one last gear question and we'll get off of it. It's a two-parter. What tires are you guys using? And in the last 12 months, what would you say is, or let's spread it out a little bit more. In the last 24 months, what would you say is the best investment in gear that you've made? And tell us why.
Toyo tires.
Yeah. We run Toyo Open Country RTs on the truck and the trailer. Now I have to... divulge that we are partially sponsored by Toyo. With that being said,
we've been
happy with these tires. Every set I've had, I've went well over 50,000 miles on them. The only thing I ever had an issue with them with was really heavy rain. But other than that, the mud, sand, rock, they just grab. But yeah. And then.
Then they wear really well if you're good about rotating them like you're supposed to.
Yeah, if you rotate them like you every other oil change, they last a long time. I'll be getting a new set when we get back from this trip.
Because we've run the rubber off of these.
What are you using? ATs, MUDs? What are you using?
RTs. They're a hybrid tire. I'm going to be getting the new ones when we get back.
And in the past 24 months, what would you say is your best investment in gear?
24 months? What have we bought in the last 24 months?
Looks like you might be sitting in it.
We've had these for a long, long time.
Well,
a couple of things. His favorite. In 24 months, but the long range America tank
by far
has been a game changer for us.
She's a water freak.
I'm a water freak.
And a power freak. Like, I'm a gas freak.
Like I don't go. I use Guzzle H2O's water filtration system, both going in the tank if I'm coming from a sketchy source. Like I would have this river we're sitting by. I would have no problem pulling water out of that with my Guzzle H2O. Mm. And then I have it coming out of our tank filtered as well through their system, because we don't clean our tank the way we're supposed to.
But for me, my Battleborn batteries, because it keeps everything working. But for me, the Long Range America fuel tank, if you're traveling long distances, it is by far the best modification I've done.
The weight off your shoulders.
Yeah.
Of especially the places of like Canada, some places that we've gone that the folks we're traveling with are like running on fumes, yeah, praying for downhills to get to the next gas station. And we're planning, okay, we've got the tow strap, we can tow them to the next gas station. And we're like, yeah, we're totally fine. We're good.
Mean, you know, Will or Phil, I mean, yeah. I get, on a good day, I get 11.5 miles to the gallon with the weight we're at. That's pulling the trailer.
And also be strategic about, you know, where you buy it. So yeah, you can, exactly, you know, especially now with high prices, I mean, you can pick and choose where you're getting.
And we do that, exactly that. Okay, where's the last place we can get halfway decent fuel costs? Fill up everything.
I'm not paying 24 pesos a liter. I'll wait until I see them at 16.
Yep.
And then the chairs that you were mentioning, Phil, for all of you listening to the podcast, Phil got to test out our chairs. Last time we met, they're the Nemo Stargazer Deluxes, and they slide back.
I like that.
They're so comfortable.
They are awesome chairs.
Well, I actually have one.
Oh, do you have one?
Yeah, I've had one since I
had. Oh, you did have one.
It's just too big for, at the time I was in the Jeep, it was too big because it's about this big, the case, and it's big, round, and fat.
It's definitely smaller than
our old ARB chairs.
Yeah, smaller than our ARB chairs, but it's definitely not a backpacking chair.
Mm-mm. But
if you can backpack it to somewhere, it'll be worth it in the end, though.
Yeah, I mean,
you can sleep in it. I have done it.
But yeah, the fuel tank for me is definitely one that, you know, I'm looking all the time. How can I lose weight? And then appreciably, the only real way for me to do it is lose the gas tank, because full, it's about 275 pounds. Or my strong box, which every tool that I could take this truck apart with everything I have in there. But I'm not going to do either of those because I'm scared to get rid of tools, because I know the minute I do that, I'm going to break something that I can't fix.
That's when you need it.
We left our freezer. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. This is about you. Go ahead.
Oh, we left our freezer behind on this trip, just again to try and cut weight. And I regret it. I regret it because I like having my freezer, because when I find good food, I can buy a lot, stock up, and that lets us stay off grid for even longer.
Yep.
But it was a big weight loss off of the back of the truck. So we carry one fridge in the truck, which is our freezer, and then one fridge in the trailer, which is the refrigerator.
It's the only way to go when you're running single zone fridges.
Because a dual zone fridge won't fit in the Gen 1 trailers. The Gen 2 trailers, they'll fit a dual zone.
I bet you I can make it fit.
I'm asking you guys first, but I want Mike's answer to this also. What are you guys looking forward to eating when you get back across the border?
Well, Mike, I think pretty sure was Mexican in another life, because he can eat Mexican food 24/7.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm, you know, because I gotta tell you, I love pizza, and one of the best pizzas I've ever had was in Baja at Aquamala. If you ever in Baja and you go up to Ensenada, go up MX3,
yep,
and keep looking on the left, and you'll see a restaurant made out of nothing but storage containers.
Shipping containers.
Dude, the food is to the moon.
It's amazing. Chinese food.
Yeah, Chinese food here is pretty not going to happen.
I think I will want to get some good Chinese food when we get back.
I'm curious, what would your order be?
Oh, wow.
What do you like to eat usually when you go to get Chinese food?
I like their poo-poo platters usually because it gives me a variety of things. I like the honey walnut shrimp. I like dim sum. I even like the chicken feet. So, yeah, it's good stuff. People look at you funny, but it's tasty.
Fried or steamed. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I would be looking for. What now?
No, I mean, I'm going to miss Mexican food the second I leave because I love it down here. But yeah. I would say if you had to give me one thing, I would say beef. There's nothing like American beef.
Yes.
That is true.
I'll second that.
Although the butcher that we found in that tiny little town in interior of Mexico, it was hung-aged beef. So it had a very good flavor. The only thing it lacked...
You're not going to get the marbling.
Yeah, the only thing it lacked from American beef is the marbling, because there really aren't very many fat cows in Mexico.
No.
But we generally, sorry, big truck. We generally eat grass-fed beef when we're back in the States. So I'm pretty used to cooking beef that doesn't have a lot of marbling. So that has by far been the best beef that we've found here was from that one little butcher shop that had actually aged their beef. So, but yeah, usually beef in Mexico is not the greatest.
I mean, look at it. I tell people, I go, wow, they ask me like, well, how come it's not that good? I go, well, you ever notice what they're eating? They're eating cactuses and trees. Of course, it's not that good.
Now, mainland Mexico, especially in the southern region, they're getting more green grass, but
a little bit.
But there still are no fat cows in Mexico.
I'm going to tell you this: the worst hot dog I've ever eaten was in mainland Mexico. Terry bought these hot dogs, and they were like red. They looked really good, dude. I put it on the bread, and I put the condiments on it, and bit into that thing, and I went. I tried to sneak around so nobody would see me and then spit it out because that was nasty.
But then we found out they didn't like them either. So it was like, okay, that's it's funny. Unanimous. We don't buy these again.
Yeah, they were bad.
So
you won't find any, I think, and this goes with certain parts of the U.S. too, is finding a good hard salami. You're not going to find that here.
Yeah, no, there's no good hard salami here. It's same, but same as Midwest.
Yeah.
Midwest, ask for good hard, hard dry Italian salami, and they take you to the summer sausage section.
What else got there, Phil?
What's next for you guys? Are you staying down for a while? Or are you? One of the questions that people ask is the border? Can you transit between Belize and Guatemala? That has been.
Yes, you can.
Sometimes it's open and sometimes it's not in the past. So I'm just wondering. I could be wrong on this, but Belize has very few border crossings.
So there's two land-based border crossings. There was a third, or they were going to make a third in the very southern part of Belize, but that one is no longer.
Yeah, that's
so there's thought. So there's the one because the road is so it's just not. So there's the one with Mexico in the north section, and then there's the one with Guatemala, which everybody we have talked to, including the Guatemalan border people at the north one, they say that one is a very nice, easy, not very crowded border crossing. So we will, in the next little bit here, be able to report on that.
Excellent.
That's where we're going to go. Try to go across back into Guatemala.
Okay. And then as far as what is next after this whole Central American adventure is back to the U.S. The only thing we have on our calendar right now is we are going to be at every single expo this year, which will be a new thing for us. We've never made it to Pacific Northwest because we've always been on a Canada tour. And we are going to, again, try to stay in one place for longer.
Yeah.
But we're going to try to make it to a lot of like the smaller
shows.
Gatherings, the smaller 4x4 gatherings. We went
to the Overland one in Georgia.
One in Georgia.
Oh yeah, I keep forget the name too, but they sent me information.
The Ambo guy.
Yeah. So we're gonna try and do a lot of the little
Overland vehicle roundup.
Yeah, Overland vehicle roundup.
That was super cool.
That was super small, super just a intimate. It was nice.
They go crazy over your rig there.
Oh yeah, they go nuts over your rig. But we're gonna try and do the little ones. And we're getting waved at by a kid.
Thank you.
And hit all the expos and find cool places to sit for 14 days so that we aren't spending more than we paid on mortgage in gas bills.
Cool. Yeah.
So we're going to wrap this up, but I got a few more questions for you, if that's okay.
All right.
We like to get philosophical around here. So
here we go.
Oh, boy. This sounds like Around the Campfire with Phil.
What do you wish you had known when you started out? It can be about your rig build, starting a new way of life, business, whatever you want.
Well, I'll start and then she can do what she, because we have definitely different perspectives on some things. For me, I wish I would have been a little bit more focused on what I wanted to do when we were doing it, because like you asked me before,
we'd have wasted less money and less time.
Right. Yeah. And we wouldn't have got as heavy as we are. I mean, am I sorry that it is what it is? No, because she's very capable, you know, front and rear lockers, onboard welder, double twin fuel tanks. I can go almost anywhere. But again, like I said, there's a price to pay for that, and it's in dollars. So I, like she said, you know, I may not have had to spend as much money and still had a very capable vehicle. I mean, I tell people all the time, you don't need all this. You need the passion to go out and do it. And yeah,
we met a couple at the Happy Manatee from Germany, who were traveling in an old German mail vehicle van.
Yeah.
So yeah, with two kayaks. You don't need all this. You can literally do it out of an old mail vehicle van that you've cobbled together. But
do I love this vehicle? Yes. And I'll never get rid of it until I'm dying and my grandkids get it.
And for me, I wish, so I handle most of the finances and I wish I would have known the gas prices were going to do what they did, because we had a specific budget in mind for the gas and we've not made that budget.
Blew that one.
So I wish I'd known what the gas prices were going to do, because I think we would have changed the way we traveled a little bit, i.e. not moving so much. Whereas that kind of had to get beat into our head that we need to slow down.
That kind of had to get beat into his head. Not her,
so. Yeah, do you see what we just spent on gas this month? So,
because I like to move. I want to see what's next around the corner.
Yeah. But anyway, okay. Next question.
Yeah. What's your favorite type of landscape or trail to take?
Oh, so landscaping for me, this overlanding lifestyle adventure has been an eye-opener for me, because if you'd have asked me this when we started, I would have told you deep, dark forest. And now I like the open vistas. I like to be able to get that view, that long view. So that's my landscape. As far as terrain, I like dirt roads. I used to like bouldering, but this is our house now. Yeah. And anybody that boulders know that bouldering equals broken things. And that's one thing when you can stick it on a trailer or limp it back to a house and fix it. But when you're bouldering in your house, you don't want to break your house.
No bueno.
So I like good dirt roads. They can be a little technical, but I don't like bouldering anymore.
I think what I learned with our Continental Divide trip was I like a combination, because I used to like doing the super hard stuff, and now, but that was a lot of dirt roads with some smaller obstacles. And then when we were getting up into Colorado and all that, we got some more, not easy, but not super hard. Just enough to go, oh, I did something. And that little bit of change as you went through the day. And that was nice for me.
And then we both decided through our travels that we dislike sand and mud.
Yeah, I'm not big on sand. And mud, you know, I'm not too happy with. I would much rather be in, you know, like running through Death Valley or running the Baja Divide, because, you know, you really don't have to worry about getting buried up to your axles and digging out. And sand gets into everything.
You cannot keep it out of your tent, no matter how hard you try.
Between your toes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been following you guys, your journey since I first met you guys. You're on a bucket list adventure already, but what would you say is currently the next big thing on your bucket list or the next big trail or adventure?
In whose head?
2 years, baby.
In my head, I want to finish out Central America, and the next one I want to knock off South America.
And then
do Australia, do the big lap around Australia.
Mike, you got anything else you want to say or a question you want to ask?
No, just tuning in and watching what these guys do and seeing them at the, whatever, the next thing we run into each other in some country.
Yeah. Well,
yep. We may see you on the way back through. We may take the ferry back across.
Never know.
Who knows?
Mike and Deb, how does someone find you on social media?
You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok at Iron Horse Overland.
And is there anything I should have asked you I didn't know to ask? Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Why I'm so handsome? No, I think
I already knew the answer to that. It's good genetics.
Yeah.
I can't take him anywhere, Phil. I just can't.
I think you covered it.
Hey, guys, thank you so very much for coming on. Me and Mike were both excited to talk to you guys. We spent pretty much the whole last week's podcast talking about you guys.
Oh, can I add one thing?
Yes, sir.
Anybody that has questions about going through mainland Mexico or any of the countries that we do go through, they can hit us up anytime on Instagram, YouTube, or whatever. I answer
Mike's really good about answering
every
stuff.
single time somebody gets sends me a message.
And you guys got to be back on the podcast for if no other reason that we didn't cover a lot of things. Like, you guys have been instructors at Overland Expo for a while now.
Yeah.
Will you be continuing that this year when you go to Overland Expo?
Yep.
Yep, we will.
As long as they want us.
Yep.
Can't assume anything.
We enjoy teaching.
Mike, any last words?
Well, safe travels, guys, and we'll get you back on, and we'll be talking about Central America.
Wait,
Thank you guys. It's so good to see both of you again.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us on, and can't wait until we can get up around a campfire again.
Sounds good to me.
All right, you guys, travel safe.
All right, guys, you know what I'm going to say. Stay safe, tread lightly, and hopefully we'll see you here or on a trail soon.
You have been listening to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints. Like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more.